Hello, Guitar Smarts listeners. This is an important announcement. Please don't skip ahead. We start this podcast with a special message. Way back in 2021, Guitar Smarts had the pleasure of interviewing the utterly fantastic Matt Long. Matt is a multiple award-winning British blues guitarist and lead singer of the British blues band Catfish and hard rock outfit The Revenant Ones. He joined us for episode number 20 and was a truly gracious guest who spoke about his career, his childhood, guitars, and meeting his hero, Joe Bonamassa. Well, Matt needs your help. Through 2023, Matt has been undergoing treatment for bowel cancer, and his recent prognosis has meant that to extend his life and retain a chance of survival, he needs to seek private treatment outside of the NHS. Matt's family have set up a GoFundMe page that is linked in the Guitar Smarts link tree in the description of this podcast, and we at the Guitar Smarts podcast would like to invite each and every listener to consider donating towards this fund that could well save the life of one of the brightest guitar talents of our generation. Now is the time, folks. Head on over to the link in the description to find the GoFundMe page. Donate what you can. Your donation could save a life. Thank you. Enjoy the podcast. Damo!
It's good to see you, mate. Are you well?
I'm very well, thanks, Matt.
You've just had a lovely holiday, haven't you?
Yes, I may be a little bit on the brown side.
Where did you go?
Went to Egypt.
Oh, very nice. I've never been, but I hear it's a very, very lovely place to go for a holiday.
I've been quite a few times.
Really?
And it's just really nice and warm. This time of year, it was so nice and warm. I mean, because it was about 30, 33.
Yeah.
But the Egyptians still think it's like winter.
God.
Or spring. So they're in sort of long-sleeved white shirts, the waiters, with like long-sleeved T-shirts on underneath.
Oh, my God.
Trousers, socks, and some walking around in hoodies. And because it's still their spring. And they've got another 20-odd degrees to go before it gets hot.
Can you imagine if they came here? They'd be in six jackets, probably. You
know? Yeah, absolutely.
I'm glad you had a nice holiday, mate.
Yeah, it was lovely. Yeah, kids enjoyed themselves, so it was really good.
I've got a bone to pick with you, by the way.
Ah,
are you going to leave any OLP Luke guitars for the rest of us?
Yeah!
You just bought another one.
I did. That was right. Dave Bartlett's fault.
Is it?
He sent me the message.
It's always somebody else's fault, isn't it?
It is. It's always your fault, actually.
Do you know what? I do regularly look on eBay and on Reverb, specifically for OLP Luke guitars, just so if one pops up, I can send it to you, because I feel like I'm throwing, you know, a cat amongst the pigeons.
Oh. So there's now, behind me,
yeah,
six Luke guitars in various forms. Yeah. So there's the actual...
Give us the rundown. Give us the rundown.
The L3.
Yeah.
The real Music Man. Then next to that is a HH Sterling.
Yeah.
And then there are four OLP Lukes. and they're all slightly different. Weird.
What are you going to do with them? Because they're in various states of repair, right? Or kind of...
Yeah. So I'm going to rebrand them.
Right.
They're going to be called the... Damo LPs.
Really? Damo
LPs. And I'm gonna have a go at refinishing them.
Oh.
So I'm gonna do them all in my favourite sparkly colours. So I'm green, gold. Okay. To match the fuchsia sparkle Music Man.
Which may be the most beautiful guitar.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
I've ever seen.
It is phenomenal. So, yes, and I'm going to, you know, do one in drop D.
Okay.
I'm going to put I've got the Fernandez sustainer in.
Ooh.
An old guitar here. So I'm going to put the sustainer in another one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're all going to have slightly different purposes. It's going to be great.
That is fantastic. Are they all, they're not all single coil guitars as well, are they? Are the OLPs all single coil humbucker?
Mm.
Yeah, which is like, that's the perfect.
It's wonderful.
That's all you need, isn't it? If you're going to go for one guitar, like if you need one guitar, a do-it-all guitar for you, like your rock, soul, pop stuff, it's got to be a HSS Strat style, hasn't it?
Absolutely. But I really like the HH, and because it's switching, It turns it into a five-way. It has got a five-way switch. So you still get approximation of the two out of phase, in inverted commas, sounds in two and four. But the middle is obviously the middle of two humbuckers, you'd get on a Les Paul. So you get that lovely sound. It's just phenomenal. And I went to, I took one of my students, Bob, who may be listening, to Anderton's to buy his Fender Acoustasonics. Anyway, he wanted one of those. So I tried out the latest Luke 4. And that's single coil, SSS configuration. And I thought, surely this is going to sound a bit weedy. It was phenomenal.
Is it really?
Even in the bridge with a single coil, you could not tell. They are ultra high output pickups. They are just phenomenal. I don't know how they've done it. It's amazing. So yeah, I want an L4 now.
I'd really like to try one of those. I thought the same thing when they came out. I'm like, I'm surprised he's gone for a single coil in the bridge. But he's gone back to a Floyd, hasn't he, in that one?
It's the 30th anniversary.
Right.
It was to hark back to those Valley Arts days.
Got it. Yeah.
Where he had a Floyd and it was more like those. I think it's just something. I've not seen him play it.
Yeah.
On anything. And they didn't have one in because I wanted to try that one.
Yeah. Do you know what? I've just been, because I've got the old Fernandes right behind me, which is the first time I've had a Floyd for a long time. My first electric had a Floyd. And I've just started getting used to having to kind of adjust my right hand position and like pressure on the Floyd to kind of manage that. Do you know, like if you're doing like a bend and then you kind of play a string underneath it kind of thing. And if you play another string whilst you're bending one above it, that other string goes flat, doesn't it? Because you've got that floating trem. So I've just been getting used to just applying the right amount of pressure with my right hand on the bridge to kind of counteract
that definitely. Kind of
thing. And it's taken quite some time to get that right. But that's a difficult skill all by itself.
Because that's on this.
The RG.
This is not an RG.
Is it not?
This is a gem.
It's a gem. Sorry, I didn't see that. Sorry.
Look.
Of course, it's got the handle. It's got the monkey grip.
Got the monkey grip. So I got that probably, my gosh, about 24 years ago.
Wow.
I love that guitar.
Oh, it's a beaut.
But yes, and that's my only Floyd Rose trem. Yeah, it's the only Floyd. And I love it.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say it's not as good as the L3 trem. I mean, it does more.
Yeah.
As in, you can do the Vi thing where you can take it down so the strings are dangling on the neck. But how often do you do that musically?
No, exactly.
Yeah. Unless you're really performing. It does some crazy, crazy stuff. But for day-to-day usage of bending a tone or a semitone or the L3 trem system is phenomenal.
Yeah, and when I came to the jam the other month and you had the L3... I couldn't believe just how sensitive that trem is. I mean, it stays in tune so well, doesn't it?
Perfect.
Like, even if you hit the strings hard, like if you give the strings a really good whack, you still get that kind of, you know, you can hear the trem.
It's flatter,
kind of
it's wonderful. Love
so
it.
So good. It may be the best guitar. The best guitar there is.
I just love it. I'm very biased. Hence having six of the things. Anyway.
Demo.
Yes.
First of all, thank you for jumping in while Kieran's not around. Kieran's traveling around. I think he's busy with work, family holidays and things. And he's had quite a few weeks where he's not been able to join for a chat. But I still wanted to have a podcast this week. And you're amazing. Saving the day. Thank you.
It's a pleasure and an honour to sit in Mr. Amliwala's seat. Not his actual seat, because that'd be weird if he's on holiday or something. And I'm in his house. I'm not in his house. Sorry.
Do you know what? Maybe we should say you are in his house, so when he listens to this, he gets a fright, you know?
Yeah.
You'd probably know your way into his house, surely.
Of course I am. Of course I do. I'll go and look through this drawer here, Kieran.
There we go.
Yeah, look at that. Look at that.
Oh, no. That's huge.
You shouldn't have one of those.
Didn't expect that. Anyway,
sorry.
Matt, we're going to talk today about, we're going to get into the nitty-gritty Sorry, mate, do you need to pause?
Oh, no, it's just I wasn't talking. I wondered why nothing was coming up on my screen. I think, why is that not doing anything? But I wasn't speaking, so.
Oh, okay.
It only goes, the green things only go up and down when I'm speaking. Sorry.
Brilliant.
Please, I'm so sorry. Continue.
It's okay. So we're going to get into the nitty gritty, right, of a bit of we're going to talk about kind of music theory or practicing stuff. But then you said you wanted to talk about ear training.
Yeah,
and that is such an important thing that I don't think we've ever talked about on the podcast before. And it's certainly like when I was a student, that was one of the most impactful things that we learned about, you know, over at the ACM. And it's something that's still like really important to me now. But what are your thoughts on it? What, you know, when did it kind of appear to you to be something important that you really wanted to get better at?
Gosh,
sorry.
This could be No. It's absolutely fine. It's a long story, really, yeah. But I'll condense. So I started having piano lessons when I was very young.
Right.
So piano is technically my first instrument. And because of my age, I started having piano lessons in the 70s. So things were quite traditional back then. And I didn't get very far when I first started having lessons. And then I started them again when I was at senior school. And part of the lessons were, it was the ear training, the oral tests.
Yeah.
And I don't... It's difficult because I've never found it very challenging.
Mm.
And we would do these tests and it was, you know, she would say, my piano teacher would say, I think her name was Mrs. Buckle.
Mrs. Buck?
I think so. Gosh, I've dredged that out of my memory. I've never uttered her name for...
You went deep there. I saw you kind of you had to go through a Rolodex in your mind and all those people, you know, some dust flying off of it. Anyway.
And so she would do, you'd do various, tests. So, I was very shy. I'm a singer now, but I was so shy to sing. I would whistle back.
Oh,
so she would play a little tune and the test would be sing this back. And I would choose to whistle it back. And she would test you on what's this interval.
Got it.
Is this a major chord? Is this a minor chord? And she would ask me the question and I'd just answer as if to say, why are you asking me this? It's like, how do you spell and?
Yeah.
At the time, it didn't seem anything. So I'm not too, but I was very much brought up on listening to my dad play jazz piano.
Right.
By ear.
Wow.
And I was in the shadows of my sister taking piano lessons and I would go and play snippets of her pieces of music after she'd finished playing without, I couldn't read the music. So I would literally play a little section of what she had been practicing for hours and she would go off and go, Mom, Damien's doing it again. Being really annoying. But, you know, just tiny little snippets of it and stuff I would hear, I would try and play on the piano without, I wouldn't know how to read the music at this stage. And it's always something that I've really thought was very, very important. The older I've got, and I learnt an awful lot more how to apply what I'm hearing into the musical endeavour, whatever I was doing. And in various stages of what I've done in bands, I've always possibly used my ear to my advantage so I could be really lazy.
Yeah.
And just do what... So I was just jumping around all over the place, but I was in a band probably the early 2000s called The Crooners, and they were all a little bit older than me, and they had been going for 20-odd years, and they played stuff from like the 1920s, like the Mills Brothers stuff, close harmony stuff, and there was no keyboards in the band, so it was two guitars, bass, drums, and four vocalists, or five vocalists, and four vocalists. And I'd never heard any of these songs and I was just invited to come along and gig with them. And that's how I learnt the tunes at the gig. We never rehearsed and I would just turn up and I would just have to follow.
Right.
in local gigs, whether it be functions or it was none of the normal function stuff. So I would have to learn the stuff as I was going along and then do solos and so on. So that I would be given a key, possibly, or not, and then you just start playing the song. Yeah. And I'd never even heard the song before.
That's kind of in at the deep end kind of thing. But were you comfortable with that at the time? Yeah.
I think so, yeah. And it was sort of just something that I really relished at the time. It was such an amazing thing to just sit there, stand there at a gig, watch. And you know, once you heard the first verse and a chorus, then I was fine.
Sorry to interrupt this conversation. However, if you're a regular listener, then do us a favour. Share us with your friends. Spread the word. Help us to grow. Remember to hit that subscribe button wherever you listen to your podcasts. Let's get back to the show.
See, that's why I enjoy jam nights. That's honestly, I've kind of fallen out of love with just general gigging, like, you know, like doing for something that's fairly regimented, you know, like set, like a set structure that everyone knows and everyone's kind of rehearsed. Fine, great. Some gigs are great. Some gigs aren't. But from a purely kind of, from a musician's point of view of enjoying what I'm doing in the moment, I love it when there's improvisation, when there's an open form, and there has to be some kind of understanding, spoken or otherwise, between the musicians, where you're doing the old nod and the wink, you know, yeah, let's go through to the chorus, like, you know, you're shouting out what the next section is, maybe. I love that, because it's like you're discovering what you're playing, but there has to be an element of sometimes, you know, you don't know what the next chord is, and you have to hear it and respond to it, and that's a big part of ear training. I think we all do that, right? So, like, when we're learning our instrument, when you're learning guitar, bass, whatever it is, so many of us would sit and listen to stuff and try and find it, whether you're approximating it, whether you were trying to find the chords, whether you were trying to find the bass note or the root note. We all kind of develop some kind of musical ear to start with. And for me, I found it when it was years later when I went to ACM, where it was kind of, it was like putting a name to the face kind of thing, you know, where I was starting to understand why that was important and what that is. And we should probably say what kind of, what we mean when we talk about being able to have like a musical ear or training, having ear training. And it's the ability to kind of, recognize intervals, maybe triads and chord sounds. That, you know, whether something's made, like you mentioned earlier on, you could hear whether something's major or minor, or whether it's augmented or diminished, and being able to understand why things sound that way. And yeah, I think we can all tell the difference between a major and a minor chord when we hear it. Mostly, I think it's a bit of ambiguity sometimes, and it can depend on the context of the song, right?
But absolutely.
That's kind of where it starts for all of us, isn't it? Trying to figure out chords of our favourite songs when we're learning guitar, doing it by ear. Now you can just go onto YouTube. Do you think there's a question. Do you think there's a problem with ear training these days because it's now so much easier to pick up the songs?
Well, absolutely. So I saw a post on Facebook or something this morning, and somebody was asking, so this is the next step on from YouTube.
These
AI apps that are able to, you put in your song, favorite song, and it will strip it apart and you can hear individual things, which I really want to talk about, because that's a great tool.
Yeah.
But what will happen to the ability to learn how to do this? So just to go back a couple of steps, just to underline what you were saying, I think when I was a child, all of the things that I did, what's this interval? Is it a major second, third, learning perfect fourth, perfect fifth?
Yeah.
And hearing those at such an early age, not really understanding context of why. I don't know why at the time, you know, I was asked to do these things and it just sounded like that. So I was able to recall that.
Yeah.
But no, so in my head, I could hum or sing or whistle a major scale, And that's how, when I remember the way I would, if I was asked an interval, I would, you were always given the route.
Yes.
And then I would, in my head, or whistling very quietly, I would slowly figure out what the interval was. And over time, that got quicker and quicker and quicker. Without, I didn't purposefully get quicker. It just happened because I was doing it quite regularly.
Mm.
So it is incremental, and it is something you learn. And I've got to stress that I definitely do not have perfect pitch. And I don't understand perfect pitch.
It's quite
I understand the concept. Yeah. And I think it is. Like Rick Beato's son.
Yeah.
Jacob Collier. I was going to say.
The craziest.
Yes.
Not just ability perfect, to. Because he doesn't just have perfect pitch in the sense of he can recognize what an actual pitch is in terms of its musical quality. But even between those musical notes, he can tell you what something's between G or A or G and G sharp. And
he can sing it as well.
Yes.
He can sing those microtonal.
Just unbelievable.
Yeah. So I have relative pitch.
Yeah.
Whereas if I, and that has, I've learnt to use that more and more and more. So as long as I had, a starting pitch, I could figure out what the interval was. And obviously this, I did all of this before I played, ever picked up a guitar. And I'm not too sure whether being able to play the piano and see things in a linear fashion with a piano, as in you only have one note.
Yes.
One key for one note. Whereas on a guitar, you will have five notes of E, which are identical. Which is different timbral qualities, obviously. So I was able to see, I learned to do, you learn to play arpeggios, and those names of those notes and the keys. And then the arpeggios, as you move them up, you are learning into, oh my God.
You mean like the triads, like the triadic intervals?
Yeah, yeah, no. All of a sudden, my brain has gone.
Are you talking like diatonically moving up through the arpeggio?
Yes, yeah, so you'll do 1-3-5.
Yeah.
3-5-8.
Got it. So you're doing the inversions, right?
I knew it began with I. Can we just scrub over this last 10 seconds as if intervals? Inversions?
Inversions. You're doing the inversions.
I'm so sorry.
Our listeners know, an inversion of a chord is where you're using a different note from that chord as the bass note, effectively. The root
bass note, yes.
Yeah, so if you play A, obviously A is your root. The major third would be C sharp and E would be the fifth. So if you play an A with C sharp in the root, that would be the first inversion, wouldn't it? And then with an E in the root, it would be a second inversion. And so that, those are inversions. So you would cycle through those arpeggios doing different inversions. So going up and down and starting from the next note and going up and down. So you'd just constantly be reinforcing the relationship of those notes to each other, wouldn't you? All the time. Mm.
So bear with me on this, what I'm going to say now. The next two words coming out of my mouth may seem a bit of a left field thing. Arnold Schwarzenegger, right?
Stop that. Stop that. Let's let that sink in.
Right.
Go on.
This all links in. I'm going to bring this round to guitar in a second. Okay. My wife read his book, one of his books, and it's called Be Useful.
Okay.
Which is a great thing. And his father told him, that phrase, if anything, just be useful in life. And I think he has. But so he was a bodybuilding champion first. I mean, the biggest in the world.
He rewrote biggest, the book, best. Didn't he?
He then became the biggest movie star in the world. And that was his goal. Then he became the governor of California, the sixth largest economy in the world. So he did three things in his life, and he set himself those goals.
Mm.
His first goal was bodybuilding when he was sat in his bedroom in Austria, and he didn't know how he was going to do it, but that was his goal. And he failed many times, and he eventually got there. Basically, the whole book tells you if you want to do something, you have to work really hard. He said there is no shortcut. Mm. You have to do the work and you have to work hard.
Yeah.
So, and then I heard there's a latest Rick Beato interview, which I found fascinating. I'm not sure whether I finished it yet, with Joe Satriani and Steve Vai.
Oh, I haven't seen that one yet, but I enjoy his interviews. They're really good.
Yeah, and they were talking about lots of things, recording processes through the 80s and 90s and so on. But Joe Satriani started speaking about when he and Steve Vai were younger. Joe's a little bit older because he taught Steve Vai.
Mm.
They both decided, and they're both in the same town, village or whatever. They both lived up the road from each other, weirdly, that they were going to become rock stars, but properly.
Yeah.
So they both went to high school and they both studied music and they talked about composition. He talked about studying composition, compositional techniques, theory. And one of the things that Steve Vai talks about is on his first guitar lesson, one of his first guitar lessons with Joe Satriani. Joe Satriani said, next week, come back and you have to know all the notes on your fretboard. The next week he turned up and he said, play me F sharp on the B string. And Steve Vai said, I don't know. He said, go away. And he sent him away saying, you need to know this. So the what I'm trying to say is that linking with the AI, YouTube, these are all useful tools. But to become really good at what you do, you need to work hard, as in absorb everything and anything you can about your goal. If you want to play the guitar and you want to be better and better and better, you have to study and study and learn. And I think it's really important to spend that time learning about ear training, harmony, practicing, knowing your theory. Mm. I've got one more quote, and this is from a drummer, Vinnie Colaiuta.
Absolute legend.
Dom Tribe's favourite. And he said in an interview, thought is the enemy of flow.
Okay. I think I've heard that one before. I didn't know it was Vinnie, but what's your thoughts on that?
So basically, when he puts himself into a situation, he cannot start thinking about what he's doing.
Got it.
He just has to crack on and do it. Whether he's reading score, playing along, he will have to employ all of the things he's learnt, everything, and then be there in the moment without second guessing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So applying that to guitar, where if you're doing an improvised guitar solo, say at a jam night, you just have to not think, right, I'm now going to employ the minor pentatonic. Oh, no, I'm going to change here and I'm going to add Dorian. There should be no thought process apart from I trust myself to deliver what is necessary at that time. Therefore, what you give at that moment will be purely you.
Yes. Yeah.
And you have to rely on all the practice, all your theory, and the more you know, the better you are going to be able to flow.
Yeah.
And just be in that moment and do what is necessary. Whatever that is, whether it be an improvised guitar solo or you're reading a chord chart or whatever, you just need to know as much as you can so you can deliver.
Absolutely. So the way I kind of analogize that kind of, or at least have analogized it in my mind, is it's like speaking a language, right? You know, if you're trying to learn French and you want to have conversations in French, you know, if you treat it like being a blues guitarist, you're just going to go and learn a lot of French phrases and then try and shoehorn them into conversations. But what you actually want to be able to do is converse freely and respond to what you're hearing. And learning a language is kind of, it's this constant endeavor to improve your vocabulary. But you eventually get to a point like I'm doing now and like you've been doing in this conversation, but not at any point, unless you've been trying to remember the word inversion, but have you had to really kind of stop and think about the words that are coming out? There's a thought that kind of conceptualizes in your mind and the words come out to support that. I don't have to think about the sentence structure. I don't have to think about, you know, each individual word. Is this going to make sense? There's a flow of words and I trust myself, like you said, to say it. But you have to go up that hill first of learning it all and thinking and thinking and thinking and thinking. And eventually you get to a point where you don't have to think anymore. Like when we talk to each other, we don't have to think really. It just kind of flows. And that's why I completely agree with you. It's so important to get to that point where you know it, you know the subject so well, and you're familiar with the content that you don't have to consider it anymore. It's there. Mm. It's available to you subconsciously. You know what Guthrie Govan said something similar recently about this, he basically said, you know, these things have to be available to you without thought. You know,
absolutely, yeah.
And that's mastery. So you could say that about anything, though, Damon. You could say that about technique. There's probably a lot of people that have got incredible technique on, you know, left hand, right hand technique that's available to them without thought. But why is this knowledge in particular, you know, having a good ear, why being able to recognize intervals and being to hear harmonic movement and recognize it? Why do you think that's in particular, really important?
Why is that all important? I was thinking of this guy, I can't remember his name. Oh God. Manusco,
Marcus.
Is that his last name?
Mark? Is it the guitarist? No. Who plays like with his fingers?
Yeah.
Marcus Manusco, I think his name is. I'm going to look at it.
Yeah. So watching him play is, his own technique, but what he has...
Frightening.
Yes, but when I was watching him and listening to him talk, he has done the work. He has worked so hard and pushed to get what he wants to achieve. He's done the Arnold Schwarzenegger thing and is still learning. He has set himself a goal and everything I can see him doing, I know he has... learned to do. He's not just doing all of this by chance. He has a mastery of grasp of harmony. He is able to hear what's going on. He knows his theory. He has practiced his technique. He knows how to control his instrument. He has utter control. So when he is put in a situation to play, he's not just regurgitating.
Yeah.
He is creating at that moment where it's just pure flow, and he's done all the thinking before that flow. I mean, all of it, and studied and worked. And there is no shortcut for that. There are so many, I see them pop up on social media. You don't need to learn music theory. All you need to know is my 7-step secret method to learning how to play the guitar. And, it's so secret, nobody's ever heard about it. None of these famous guitarists. But I don't think there's any substitute for learning as much as you can about your subject, whatever that is. And we're talking about music, specifically guitar.
Hmm.
But, you know, Robin Ford often talked about he taking inspiration for his guitar solos from saxophone.
Yes.
He loved the way the saxophone sounded. So that's using your ears to, I like the sound of that. I'm not going to emulate the sound of a saxophone, but the melodic phrasing.
Yeah.
And that's what sets him apart. Jazz saxophone played on an electric blues rock fusion style genre that he does. But he would have to have listened to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't have used an AI app to listen to that saxophone in a recording.
Thank goodness he didn't, because he wouldn't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
He wouldn't be the guitarist he is. I, there's always this argument, isn't there? There's kind of this, there's this tension between people that, you know, think like you do and like I do about, coming to understand the importance of understanding music at a theoretical level. And then those people that kind of think that it's a bit anti-rock and roll to really know this stuff, and, you know, it's not that important. I don't think either of them are incorrect. I think obviously it depends on your role or your kind of what your intentions are as a musician and where you want to go. You know, if you want to just be a rock and roll star and you're just playing riffs, so you don't necessarily need that much vocabulary behind what you're doing, that's fine. But it's like I said, going back to that analogy I had earlier on about speaking a language, you want to be able to articulate yourself well when you're speaking to someone. Can you imagine having a conversation and not being able to get your point across because you don't have enough to draw from in terms of your, you know, vocabulary and being able to really define what it is you're trying to say? It's that's difficult in a conversation. That is where you start to think and start to, you know, come up with less. And I do think it's important to try and stretch your understanding. Certainly for me, when I was trying to get, like, probably more later in my life as a guitarist, trying to get to a point where I thought, there's things I really wish I could play. Not just from a technique point of view, but from like a melody point of view, there are songs I really like listening to that I wish I knew how to improvise over and create my own solos. And I just don't know how to do it because I can't hear in my mind what those notes are. I don't understand what fits. And then you start to kind of do the work and, you know, I mean, it all just starts with the major scale, understanding the major scale, what those intervals are through the major scale and how they sound, and actually, really importantly, how they feel against the chord you're playing on, right? You know, the context of the thing you're playing on. That's super important. And that took a long time. It doesn't take a lot of knowledge, really, to really figure that stuff out. It doesn't take a lot of remembering, but there's a foundation there that I think is really important, that I think people should, if you've never really worked on your ear, and when we say working on your ear, what we really mean is understanding what you're hearing at a musical level. You know, to be able to hear a major third interval and to be able to say that's a major third. I don't know what key it is, but I know the relationship between those two notes is a major third. To be able to recognize those things, actually, I think it's really important. On the face of it, it might seem, what's the use of just being able to hear that? Well, the point is, it's like reading a word you don't understand and looking it up in the dictionary and going, oh, okay, I understand what that word means now. I've never used that before. And then 2 weeks later, you find yourself using it in a conversation. And that's the importance of it to me. You're expanding your, whatever you take in can also then come back out. That's what I learned quite late on. Because early on for me, I was definitely one of those, don't know if it's so important, really. I just want to play blues and rock and roll.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, talking about exactly as you were saying, that is the context of a note is everything. So when I was starting to learn to play guitar, I think my first port of call was Dave Gilmour.
Right. Okay. As in he's your first kind of inspiration, really? Is it?
Definitely. He would play these beautiful sort of, they are very bluesy, but it's not just blues lick after blues lick. Yeah. He would spend time on a note. And what I took away from that, as opposed to just learning his solos and being able to recreate them. So for the first guitar note in Shine On You Crazy Diamond, he bends up to the root note.
Right.
And I spent time learning how to play that one note. Just, you know, so technique, it was a bend, a bend, holding the bend, adding vibrato, and then understanding that context over a minor chord from, at the time I didn't, but it, you know, from the flat seven up to the, up to that root note and holding that note and then playing that note against the next chord. How different does that note sound?
Yeah.
That G against maybe a chord of C minor.
Yeah.
Or a chord of E flat major, E flat major seven. The context changed.
Yeah.
And I think I'd always explored this, and I'd explored this through play on the piano. I would hold a chord down and change the bass note underneath.
Yeah.
Crudely. And I loved the way that the triad I had in my right hand changed, the sound changed when I played a different bass note.
Mm.
And then vice versa, holding a pedal in the bass and changing the chord up the top. How the context of that pedal note changes the sound of a chord. It was fascinating.
Yeah.
So I was absorbing this by listening and doing, and maybe at that time not really understanding. And I've added the understanding. I've done the dictionary looking up afterwards as I've got older, and understood why all of this works. But the context of one note and how... So I always talk about this one solo from Eric Clapton's August album. I've bored Kieran to tears with this song, and it's Holy Mother.
Oh,
and in the original recording, he plays one note and the chords change underneath, and he holds this for 8 bars, 10 bars, and he repicks it and bends
just
up
doing
to
the
it,
same
and it's
bend, isn't he?
And you think, but he's playing one note. Why is this working? Obviously, because it's a note within the scale, so it's all diatonic. But the context of that note continuously changes as the chord sequence changes underneath. And it's a bold thing to do, just playing one note.
Yeah, it is,
And yet it's the most beautiful thing. And when he then comes away from that note, it's also magical.
Yeah.
Because you've been held in this tension of how long is he going to hold this note? And then it's released. So it's, tension and release. And he wouldn't have sat down and, right, what I'm going to do is create tension and release by holding this, whatever the note is. he was flow. He was flowing.
Yeah.
To come back to what Vinny said.
He was flowing. Without a doubt.
He was flowing.
But that's actually, the thing you mentioned about changing the note on the pianos and seeing how that affect. Jacob Collier spoke about that, about when he was first, when he was a lot younger, one of the first things he used to do fascinated him. Somebody was asking him, what did you learn to play? What songs? And he said, well, I just liked to play a chord on the piano, like maybe a C major chord. Mm. And then I'll just move one note. And I used to just, I'll play the whole thing again, but maybe with just one finger moved. And I just wanted to hear, how does that affect the chord? How does that affect the quality, of what I'm feeling when I hear that? And, and that's such a important experiment to do. Mm. Even now, if you're a guitarist listening to this, pick up your guitar and just think when you play a chord, when you play a C chord or whatever, even if you're changing it to something that isn't a chord you would usually use, just do that. Just try to change something. And then just play it and listen to it and think, well, how has that changed? What am I hearing? It's so complex, but you can simplify it to kind of come to a better understanding of it. And that's a great way to do it. I like doing that now. I try and test myself sometimes to see if I can move throughout every note, from C to C on my guitar, playing chords whilst trying to keep one note the same the whole time.
Mm.
Like C major has got if I'm playing a C major in like an A position, with on the third fret, like a bar chord, like an A-shaped bar chord, if you're thinking of the caged system. Let's say you've got an E on the fifth fret on the B string. So I'll challenge myself. I'll go down to like a B sus 4. I've still got that E in there, And then I'm thinking like with a stretch, you could do like a B flat sharp 11, right? Because the E would be the sharp 11 in B. Or I could do that kind of, or I could do like a B flat diminished, because that would have, and then I'm thinking A minor would have the E in, and then like a G altered chord, a G sharp 5 kind of thing. So I'm kind of like, I'm just playing chords, but trying to keep that same note in the chord all the time whilst I'm changing the root down a semitone each time. Because, and again, Jacob Collier talked about this, there's no right or wrong notes in a chord. It's just about context and movement through those notes. I really recommend you try and do that, or anyone listening, try and play a chord. First of all, like we said, move the notes around and just try and play it and understand how it makes you feel, how it changes. But another cool exercise to do is try and play as many chords as you can that are different, that have the same one specific note in it, and see how that note changes the sound of the chord. Cool.
Absolutely. somebody that we've probably never mentioned on this podcast is Steve Lukather. he talks about, you know, one of the reasons why he was hired a lot is that he had all of this knowledge, and he was hired mainly as a, you know, he would be a rhythm player.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be hired as the guy that would come and noodle over everything.
Yeah.
Because he said he understood common tones, yeah, which is exactly what you're talking about. The notes that are common to that chord, and he would create from the chord chart or whatever he has to work with, a melody or a chord or a phrase that would encapsulate a feeling by using the same note. So it's not complicated.
Mm.
And so being able to do something that on the face of it, if somebody says to you, play that part, and you look at it, go, well, that's really easy. Of course it is, because the person that created it will have had that vision to create something that is very simple. But to do something very simple, you have to have a wealth of knowledge, I think.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you've got to understand, like, one of my favorite rhythm parts that Steve Lukather ever did, which is one of the things I play all the time when I pick up a guitar, just generally, is his rhythm part to I Keep Forgetting by Michael McDonald, which everyone knows, yes, that song, because it was sampled by Warren G, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But his rhythm part on that is just this little popping thing. Just ding, 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 just that. And it's just on, and it's just the root note, because it's in E minor, so he's just going between E and D. Ding, 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 ding. But then the chords change down to C. Like, does this, you know, down through the, you know, it's going down a major third to the C. But he's still playing that because it still works, right? Because that E and D is now the, it's got a different relationship to the chord. It's, but it's still like, exactly like you said, it's common to that chord, because he's playing the E and the D is now the major third and the major second of the C that's now being played. So you can, you end up with this common thread running through the song, which hooks people in. But he knew that if I play this, then that's, I can just keep playing that through, regardless of the chord changes. But like you just, you made the great point. He wouldn't have been able to do that if he didn't have that, unless he stumbled on it accidentally. But really, it's like you say, it's having that knowledge to know, I could play something different over the E minor, but it wouldn't be common to the C major that's coming up. So I've got to choose something that can thread through what I'm playing.
Mm.
That's why it's important, I think, to just back up your abilities with some knowledge that allows you to draw new ideas from.
And draw them from when you are studying or learning. That sounds as though you've got your head in a book, but studying and learning is listening.
Yeah.
So I spent time, especially when I was a lot younger, is listening to various bits of classical music, just the ones I liked. And I wasn't told to study that. I just thought my dad always had classical music on and jazz.
Mm.
It was always that in the house growing up. And I would try and maybe borrow one of his cassette tapes.
Yeah.
This is pre-CD.
Brilliant.
and listen to this music, and just, I wouldn't be able to analyze it at the time. I didn't know what was going on, but just by listening to it. And then when I came to do some actual proper study, say to Bach chorales, and then getting into the nitty gritty of studying four part harmony. So you had to know what chord 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 was, how chords are made. And then there are strict rules around this classical period of time, up to probably sort of Beethoven sort of time. But, you know, spending time with Mozart, and where the rules were very, very strict, I learned so much that I'm able to apply to popular music theory, which is used for pop music today. I learned so much from going back four centuries. we've got that lineage in Western culture of so much music's been written. And when you listen to it, when I listen to it now, I can hear that it's simple harmony chords, 1, 4, 5.
Yeah.
But then we're going, they use an awful lot of inversions.
Yeah.
And those bits that make it very interesting, but it's also the context of the beautiful, whatever the melody is, against that standard harmony of 1-4-5 and how everything progresses in that music, which just absolutely fascinates me. And I do use when I'm listening to whatever I'm playing. Now, the more you know,
yeah.
So this comes back to your thing about, you know, does knowing your theory stump your creativity? No, I really, and I know Joe Satriani also doesn't believe that as well. You know, you have to work hard to get to that point where you are able to draw upon your whole knowledge to create. So, I think the more you know, you can then go into some sort of Zen stage to create.
Absolutely.
And see what comes out. And then you analyze it afterwards, maybe.
Yeah, completely agree. I mean, we've spoken about a few people in this, you know, obviously Steve Lukather, Joe Satriani, Steve Vai, Jacob Collier, a lot of those people, and all of them share, would agree with you, right? It's important to understand your craft. But I think it does still depend on what you want to do. I mean, if you're listening to this podcast and you play guitar because you just enjoy it as a hobby and want to sit at home and play songs that you really enjoy, you know, then it's probably not necessarily going to be important to you to want to really, you know, do your ear training. But for me, like if I was starting out now as a professional musician and thinking, I really do want to get better at what I do, and I really do want to make a career out of it, then you've got to put the work in. You, like you say, you've got to really, really put the effort in to just learn your craft, understand what it is you're doing, right? Understand what you hear.
So if you, you know, I don't want to use the word just, but just say you wanted to just be a blues player.
Yeah.
You would then dissect you. That would be your study. You would, and I think this is what, you know, Clapton is not your highly trained theoretical guitarist. He doesn't have a wealth of technique, but what he does so well. But he spent time learning blues.
Yeah.
And he did it with his ears. He put records on of the old stuff, and he would try and play it by listening, repeating. So that's how important ear training is. But he would spend time investigating everything about that subject of blues for him. And then over the years, you know, he was able to put it into various other genres, and as he got into sort of country and rock and, but you know, you could apply that to any genre, couldn't you? That if you're a guitarist that just wants to play death metal, you have to listen to everything that's ever been recorded and carve your way through that. You can be genre specific if that is what you wish to do.
Yeah.
But if you're going to do just be death metal, why not look at early heavy metal to see how it influenced and the progress to how death metal came about?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm talking about something I don't know anything about.
I know what you say.
You know.
I know what you mean.
So, you know, for example, Mr. Lukather, you know, he was very inspired by Jeff Beck.
Yeah.
So I obviously love Steve Lukather. So I spent some time listening to Steve Lukather, and then, okay, he was influenced by Jeff Beck. So I spent some time listening to see how Steve Lukather was influenced by Jeff Beck, or maybe what he took from Jeff Beck. And he was very influenced by, for his songwriting, Steve Lukather's songwriting, from George Harrison.
Yeah.
And you can hear some of that. And obviously Steely Dan. So you take something that you want to achieve, and then you start dissecting it, and you do your own study, whatever that route may be.
Yeah.
But you just need to do the work, I think.
I think
it's not work, it's play.
It is play.
It's just sitting down and listening, playing and listening. So, you know, we use this word play, and it is. We are at play, so make it fun.
Yeah.
Just listen and absorb as much as you can, I think, you know, no matter what it is you want to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But also, like, start with what you already know. You know, even if you are only going to be a blues player, then start with trying to maybe just gain a bit more understanding of blues. You know, it's a you know, there's a, whatever key it's in, it's generally the 1, 4, and 5 chord. And if you're listening to this now and you kind of, you don't know what that means, check that out. It means you, if we're in the key of A and you were to harmonize the A major scale into chords, you know, starting with the first note and then starting with the second note, then the chords in the blues, in a blues form, are the 1st, 4th, and 5th chords that you get from doing that. There's a bit of theory in there, and you know, you can figure that out, and then you start to hear like, oh, okay, I'm hearing a 4 chord there, because if we're in the key of this, and I think it's just, and that now all of a sudden, because you picked up a bit of information, you start finding yourself understanding other things a little bit more. I think it's just a world that opens up. But anyway, we need to wrap up, mate. What's your final kind of tip? If you're speaking now to the audience, to the Guitar Smarts audience, for those guys that maybe want to now go out there and do a little bit of ear training maybe, or just do improve their own understanding, what would you say?
I think first and foremost, you need to, first and foremost, you need to listen. Now, whatever form that takes, you need to listen to music and enjoy it. Just face value.
Yeah.
I like that song. You don't need to know why. You then need to listen critically. Right, I'm going to listen to just the rhythm guitar part.
Yeah.
And then just listen to it. Maybe figure out what the chords are. Listen to, do I know what the key is? You know, if you've got a guitar hand, play a note, listen to the song. What's the relationship to the note you've just played so you can figure out the key? Is it major? Is it minor? So it's, everything is ear training. And it doesn't need to be a song you're going to learn. You could put anything on. You could put a crazy pop track on or a piece of classical music. Try and hear it critically. Listen to what the instrumentation is. Listen to the arrangement, where a theme may come back. Just listen to it and observe.
Yeah.
And when you are playing, you need to listen. You need to listen to what you are doing, but more importantly, what everyone else is doing, so you can react appropriately to what is going on. And I think that will make you a better player.
Yeah.
If you are able to put yourself in context to what else is going on around you and not just stand there and play stuff and hopefully it will fit in. You have to make you fit within whatever is going on. And that only comes from listening.
Yes.
So listening.
Yeah.
Just listen to everything. Listen to what's going on around you. Listen to what's being said musically to you.
Perfect.
That's it.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like that, open the door to kind of your thoughts when you're listening to something and question, you know, why it is you feel that way when you... Do you know what whose music I think is perfect for that? Is like John Williams, you know, his film music, you know, because he wrote such simple melodies. You know, anyone can recall, you know, Indiana Jones theme tune, you're singing it in your head now, right? You know, Jurassic Park, and like
I'm a dinosaur.
Sorry, you sounded like David Bowie there.
sorry, I interrupted.
But like, he wrote such simple melodies. And going back to Rick Beato, who you mentioned, well, I love his YouTube channel because he tries to connect people so well with an understanding of things musically at a complex level without trying to alienate people by being too kind of, you know, just being too complex or anything. But he did a video a year or two back. I think it was called like the greatest melody of all time or whatever. But it was a breakdown of the main theme from E.T. You know, that melody, that's a John Williams thing. You know, da, 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 da. Just major scale. That's the most basic melody. You could teach anyone that in the first day of having an instrument, that melody, major scale. But the chords, like you say, the chords change under it as it goes up and the melody changes slightly in relation to the chord to bring a different kind of tension. But he talks through it and he says, this is what you're hearing. You're hearing just the normal major scale. And then the next one comes along and he's like, oh, now he's it becomes a bit of a Lydian thing, you know.
Yeah, he loves
just changing this note That's why when you listen to this song, when you think, oh, that's so cool, it feels so uplifting. It's because he's actually uplifting one note in the melody kind of thing. Go and watch that and go and see kind of an example of somebody explaining why things feel and sound the way they do when certain notes and intervals change around the chords. And I think that's a great starting point for being able to get a kind of your head around understanding intervals, you know, and ear training and being able to listen critically, like you say. But there we go, dude.
Amazing.
Well, mate, I can't thank you enough again for jumping into Kieran's hot seat. remember to put everything back where you found it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Don't go through any of the drawers upstairs, and definitely leave the Tokais alone, I think he said.
There's no room on my guitar stacks here. Thank you so much for having me along. It's been so much fun, I've really enjoyed just chewing the fat. It's so good.
It's just
so
a hangout, good.
Thanks for having me along.
We'll get you on more often. Just for a good old chin wag. Anyway, thanks a lot, Damo, mate. I'll see you at a jam sometime soon, and I'll speak to you soon.
Cheers, Matt. Thanks very much.
Bye bye.
See you later. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening. If you like what you hear, then why not give the rest of our shows a good listen too? And if you love our podcast and are a regular listener who wants to support the show even more, then consider buying us a coffee over on our Buy Me a Coffee page. Anyway, see you again next time on the Guitar Smarts podcast.